from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
All right, my name is Jacob Forte, and today I have a special guest because my usual co-host is dead in my bathtub.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I killed the other host, Ryan. My name is Tom. I'm here for the day, and just want to give you a shout out, atheist.
All right, so my friend Tom here is a non-theist, so it should switch up the discussion a little bit. Yeah, we went really far back, you know, like we went from atheist to non-theist. Wow, what a stretch, eh?
It's like a centimeter.
We're diverging.
It should be a very tense debate with a lot of agreement over most of the important stuff.
All right, today we're going to be talking about two subjects. Firstly, we're actually going to be talking about the legend of Atlantis. And we're also going to be talking about a few of the stories that Tom has experienced in his travels in the South while on business. But first up, let's deal with the Atlantis thing. Now, I put up a video on my website. It's up right now. And essentially, the video is called The Legend of Atlantis. It's actually really a five-parter. I only put the first part.
Wait, hold on. Did you say Atlantis?
No, I said Atlantis.
Okay, just checking. Carry on.
Because Atlantis would be ridiculous.
It would be ridiculous.
So it's a five-parter. I only put the first part because I assume no one needs to actually watch 5 hours of this stuff.
Basically, you need 5 minutes of this video to get the gist of how they're tying, what is it, the Illuminati to Kennedy assassination, to pyramids, to chakras, to reincarnation, to basically...
They cover everything. They cover the gamut.
Every hokey belief system you could possibly want to throw in a bag and shake it around. They've done it in 5 minutes.
This is why I put on the site, thegoodatheist.net, I put out a little challenge for everybody. I want to keep it there for a little while. The challenge is to see if you can come up with a more ridiculous version of the origins and the existence of Atlantis. If you can come up with a more ridiculous version than what they have there, well, you're not going to win a prize, but you will win the respect of everybody else who's actually watched that. Because already they've lost respect for themselves from having spent a good 5 hours watching this garbage. But I wanted to cover a little bit about, you know, talk a little bit about Atlantis, at least the legend, just to kind of clarify everything. Maybe there's some confusion. Generally, it seems as though people kind of have this very, I don't know, fragmented notion of what it is. Just to cover it really quickly, basically, the only time Atlantis is ever mentioned is actually in Plato's The Republic. If you don't know it, basically The Republic is a bunch of dialogues, and in one dialogue he mentions this...
That's where two people are talking, by the way.
Yeah,
you know... Just thought I'd throw that in.
You're not... No talking.
Okay.
So in this dialogue, essentially he talks about this military power that had conquered much of Western Europe and Africa, and this military power he called Atlantis, and they basically were supposed to be around about 9,000 years before his time, which places it, quite far back.
Now, did he present this as a legend or a myth, or was it, like, presented as a historical fact?
Well, the way that the dialogue works is essentially it's just presented as if it's understood amongst the individuals that are talking, which...
So it's not really clear.
It's not really clear, and plus much of the dialogue, which is the Critias dialogues, much of those dialogues are actually missing. They're lost to history. Unfortunately, we just don't know if there's any more to it than that. I mean, you have to remember the Republic is essentially just... a compilation. It's not a complete work.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's no other mention of Atlantis anywhere else in history. This is just a creation by Plato, and essentially the idea is very much like Thomas More's Utopia, where you create a fictitious civilization that you can pretty much establish a straw man argument with, where you're like, okay, I'm going to set him up, and I'm now going to knock him down to just point out its flaws, and he intermingled it with some of the ancient legends, like, apparently it was the habitation of Poseidon, but Zeus destroyed it because Atlantis was getting really cocky, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, the point is,
I would do that.
You would?
If I could. I'd destroy Atlantis.
Why not? No one's going to miss it.
Who's going to miss it?
It's 9,000 years ago. Well, by now, 11,000 years ago, so...
Well, it sounds like this new video has a lot in common with the old story, the old dialogues, in that they appeal to Atlantis to maybe gain credibility in some way, or to kind of spruce up their little story. I don't think there's any difference with this video.
Well, it's
5 minutes in, and we know where they're headed.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, the whole legend of Atlantis, as we know right now, was actually a hodgepodge of a lot of different ideas. Like, for instance, you have in the 19th century, there were a number of, well, not a number, there were a few historians, when they were trying to understand kind of like the history of the Mayan and the Aztec civilizations, they thought to themselves, well, there's no way these guys could have had technology without, you know, Western influence. So they created the idea that perhaps they were descendants of the Atlanteans that shared, you know, common technology.
This made sense. Plot device for history.
A deus ex machina of history. So, and then it basically got taken over by the growing New Age movement that really occurred in the 1920s with this psychic called Edgar Cayce, who basically, he was a, you know, self-proclaimed psychic, clairvoyant, whatever.
They're the best kind.
Well, I think they're the only kind. of kook. Anyways, this kook claimed that Atlantis wasn't the military threat this, as described in the Republic, but rather a technologically advanced civilization with, you know, submerged with ships, and they went into outer space, and he predicted that it would return and rise up in 1969. Well, oops. There was a little bit of an oopsie. And since then, kind of like the whole New Age mecca has added every single bit that as it evolves, you know, like adding reflexology, chakras, everything.
Ricky.
It's a hodgepodge. It has become the hodgepodge of the New Age movement. So if you can't explain anything... It comes from Atlantis. So that's the background.
It's already out in Atlantis.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 11,000 years ago, they started on the PS4.
Yep.
The PlayStation Portable, yeah.
And early cavemen drew a PS1, as it were, to become.
Well, there it was represented as a rectangle. But if you squint really hard
and you plug some controllers into that stone rectangle, PS1.
Yep, it's
the original.
Well, it's because it's powered by crystals.
Oh, yeah, infinite source of inexplicable energy.
Now you watched a few minutes of that. I want to hear your rendition because I ran through. I don't want to do the entire podcast just talking myself. I want you to run through what you understood because there's a lot of information to digest. So let's hear what you thought you understood in the documentary.
Well, basically, it reminded me of that movie Videodrome in that it was a rapid succession of religious symbols, kind of like the blipverts that appeared in that movie, where it was just boom, you're seeing the Star of David. Boom, you see the cross. Boom, you see the pyramids with the eye on it. And so on and so forth. So it was a rapid succession of images. And then I started to get really bored, and I started talking about how the Illuminati did some blah, 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 blah. It went on and on. And then, bang, nudity. And
mm-hmm.
I was hooked. I was
nudity.
Honestly hooked. Yeah, apparently
they filmed that movie
in 5 different countries.
Yeah, apparently, like, we looked at the site. Now, we were trying to do a bit of background search so that we could figure out what was the underlying motivation of establishing such a ridiculous
documentary? Well, we believe in primary documents, so we went to the original webpage, which hasn't been updated since 2000, so must have a pretty good page rank on Google by now.
I like the fact that the background were confusing looking stars. Remember those old HTML sites where they had one background image and it just repeated all over again?
Repeated.
And there were no tables? It was just basically one long, string of just writing.
Yeah, all punctuation was blurred by the constellations behind the text, which was also quite white and bright.
If you do that, you don't even need punctuation.
No, who needs it? You have Atlantis and nudity. So,
ooh, nudity.
5 minutes into this, you know,
there
we basically had a connection between all going conspiracy theories, all going religions, and pretty much any tenuous link to Atlantis. Well, to be honest, we hadn't really talked about Atlantis too much yet in the movie, but it was headed there. It was headed there.
I enjoyed the fact that the reason I put up the contest is because I don't think that there's any way that it could be more ridiculous. Like, I was just trying to think, like, it combines everything. It combines aliens building cities in the core of the Earth. It combines, like, people healing people with magnets.
There's definitely a common thread, but I wouldn't say that there's any segues at all. There's no logical link between
the
sentence.
That doesn't mean to. I mean, if they run into a problem, they just yell universal consciousness, and then they can move on to the next
point.
Or
infinite energy.
Right.
Very convenient.
In crystals.
Crystals.
I love how people are always like, wow, crystals must have powers. I'm like, crystals are cool, I guess, in the sense of how they, you know, replicate.
The best was the depiction of the angels that lived in the core of the Earth, I think it was. Or maybe they were aliens.
Now you're just being silly. They lived in the core, but they were ejected from the Garden of Eden in this core.
Oh,
and then they interbred with the human population.
God! as any ejected angel would do.
Evidently, they. But in the photo, they had space vehicles. I don't know why they couldn't have just gone somewhere else. They look kind of clunky, actually, those space vehicles.
Yeah, they looked pretty low-tech, almost as if they were conceived in the 70s.
No, it was 80s. It was like, around the time of V.
Yeah.
The miniseries with the alien things,
right.
And they looked pretty much
like
that.
Although the maps on the website indicate it was from 70,000 BC, so it's funny how things, history repeats itself. Fashions come and go.
Every 70,000 years, we get stuck with the 80s.
It's that cycle. Bell bottoms? 70,000-year cycle. Never mind. But the other thing that I found a little humorous was how they were trying to explain the origin of life, which is a question that comes up in all valid or non-valid belief systems.
Or quasi-religions, I guess we can qualify it as that.
Quackery. And they said, because of the diversity of life on Earth, insects and people and whatever, it became difficult for souls to
reincarnate.
Once you live a life as a beetle, you're living for about a year, and you starve for five, you go into hibernation, your head gets bitten off, you're still alive for another year, whatever. It's hard
Is that real science? I don't think beetles live a year without a head.
Whatever, but cockroach, for example.
That's 2 weeks.
Imagine living a life as a cockroach, and as the movie says, you're trying to gain as much
life experience.
So you can become a true human and go back to the core of the Earth and live in your little iron ball house, whatever.
No, they didn't live in the core of the Earth. This is what you don't understand.
Okay, well, they marched around it. There was definitely a diagram of them marching.
That was a diagram. How can you... the reason there was a city there is they were overseers, because the human bodies are perfect entities in order for people to reincarnate themselves.
Okay,
Jesus!
Okay. Anyway.
I have to explain everything.
The thing that they were trying to explain was how difficult it became for some souls who were living as insects and probably single-cell organisms to translate that life experience into a human life. So eventually there's a clash of souls, and we got that whole earth, fire, water...
I like it. They actually said there were only five elements.
Yeah, there's only five true elements.
And it's not iron or,
I guess
sodium.
Mendeleev was wrong. All those pesky elements with their atomic weights.
They don't follow the whole nice and concise and easy to remember five.
The funny thing about
that
those five is the chemistry doesn't work. But
it would be kind of funny. Like, I actually missed the whole five thing because I think that doing those tests.
Who's in your five? Do you have fire in your five?
Your
five?
It's not in my speed dial.
I took water off my five.
Who'd you replace it by? Chakras are on my five.
Who's in your 12?
I think it's 13, actually.
Anyway, so I thought it was amusing how they felt it was necessary to point out how difficult it was for an insect to get reincarnated as a human, let alone humans.
No, it wasn't insects, it was insectoid race,
alien race. Alien infinite energy crystal. pyramids with the eyes on top.
To be fair to Tom, he didn't watch it. I watched about three times because it literally takes that time to get
it.
Well,
I watched enough to cover everything from, the origin of the universe to the Illuminati. And I think that's all I really need to know.
It's everything you need to know in life. You can ignore all of the books.
I'd like to buy a t-shirt, but the website's from 2000 and they have some outdated links. Oh, the best part about the website, if you dig around on it, is the fact that they actually posted the rejection letters
from
about 20 different studios.
It's awesome.
Demanding that they send
like,
the tapes back.
I don't appreciate you not sending them back, or like, your letter was not courteous enough. I'm like, why are you posting up these letters? I guess they want to demonstrate that the system was against them.
Sometimes you can judge a book by its cover, and I invite all of you listeners to go check out the website. Maybe we'll post a link on the show notes.
Yeah, I'll post a link after the
seriously judge this book by its cover. You'll know why when you see it.
It's funny because they said that they spent $500,000 on the movie. How much do you think they spent on the site?
I don't know.
What are you pointing at? No, it's fun.
Okay. I just thought I saw the Elohim coming through your window.
No, no. He's
a little creepy.
It was actually just a bug.
Okay. Oh, well, maybe...
He's reincarnated?
Yeah. No, that's your next soul, brother. You're going to switch roles in the next life. Why don't you just expedite it?
Now, I'm trying to... what I want to talk about right now with you, and I want to ask you this question, is why do you think that the Atlantis myth is so popular? Why do you think it's so pertinent and in our modern day culture? Why does it continue to persist?
Well, here's the deal. First, you have to believe that it is pertinent, and maybe you can convince me that the Atlantis myth is so relevant.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question: who do you talk to that doesn't at least know the word Atlantis? And how many people don't?
Well,
how many people have their own probably theories about what Atlantis is, even if they haven't watched this super fascinating documentary?
I see what you mean.
So, like, if it was just written about in Plato's Republic, and let's be honest, how many people, what percentage of the population has actually read this? Not a great deal of individuals.
No, only people who have been reincarnated as philosophers
have read it. Anyways, the point is, despite the fact that, you know, even though as a philosophical work it's fairly popular, most people don't study philosophy. Despite that fact, people are very aware of the word Atlantis.
Okay,
they have their
awareness.
Own theories.
There's
a great deal of awareness. My question is, why? Why is it so popular?
I think it encapsulates the hope that maybe there was a culture that was more advanced than our own and has been obliterated off the face of the earth. Because I think we feel that link, you know, the culture that's at the peak of cultural evolution, mm-hmm. because we ourselves feel like we're at the peak of our cultural
evolution. So we see ourselves in the Atlantis.
And we, you know, we maybe take it as a cautionary tale, like that could be us.
Well, it's funny too, because if you look at the modern mythology of Atlantis, I mean, you're right, it does follow a lot of that whole, you know, reaching a peak of your civilization, and then arrogance followed by, you know, cleansing, which is essentially the destruction of the city, you know, like the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah kind of a thing,
yeah.
or Noah's flood, you know, these redemption kind of scenarios, and all of a sudden, you know, we're thrown back into a dark age, but come to rediscover the wisdom of the ancients. These are popular, and you know what? One of the reasons I think that they're so popular is because these kinds of things, well, they really do happen. Civilizations grow, they peak, they fall.
Mm-hmm.
There's confusion, barbarism, death, destruction, and then the new civilization comes over and sort of like tags along. We would like to think, though, that obviously being, you know, present in this lifetime, we'd like to think that, you know, what would happen, this is almost a fantasy, what would happen if really, really, really advanced civilizations such as ours, with the ability for space flight and all this, and even to the ability to destroy ourselves and the planet completely, what would happen if we fell into, you know, kind of obscurity, oblivion, if we had to go through this redemption? What would it be like?
We would sink into the ocean, obviously. That's what happened to Atlantis.
They would be bad if all of our comets sunk into the ocean. That's global warming, buddy!
Space travel, according to this fine documentary that I just watched, 5 minutes of.
5 minutes off. Well, 50.
Clearly states that intergalactic space travel was commonplace, if not rather ordinary back then.
It's great.
We're
that
not
now
even
the details.
Days.
Great that the details of how that works. You know, like trying to overcome that whole boundary of the.
I'll tell you how it works. Infinite energy based on universal brotherly love,
consciousness, and power.
And crystals.
Yeah. We have crystals here. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a couple. I got a quartz in my watch. Do you think that it... And you know what? Here's the weird part. This watch I purchased 8 years ago, and I've never had to change the battery. Now, you could say really good battery, right?
No. I'm not going to say that. Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All of you people that have batteries that failed, it's because your crystals weren't attuned to the universal consciousness, like mine was.
It's rudimentary rhythmology. Everybody knows that. You have to be in sync with the vibes of the universe for anything to make sense.
Oh, yes, my friend Tom is a rhythmologist himself.
Not really.
It's a self-created religion in which...
I needed something to believe in, so a while back I invented my own belief system based on rhythms. Mainly musical rhythms.
Well, everybody likes music,
not
so it's...
Not this biorhythm crap.
No. Everybody loves music, so obviously you can go with it, right? Like a little Frank Sinatra, Girl from Ipanema?
Exactly.
That's a holy song.
Yeah.
Tell us a little. Now, moving on, because obviously I don't know where we can go with Atlantis other than nowhere. Let's move on. I wanted to talk
straight into the ocean. That's where we can go.
Straight to the bottom of the ocean, where they still exist today as mermen. I wanted to talk a little bit about your experiences traveling, as the traveling agnostic, down in the States. Now, obviously, just to give a background check for everybody that listens that's not Canadian, you have to understand that for us, religion is one of those things that, although there is a great contingency of individuals that are religious, it's not really something that is that talked about. And if it is, it's just generally, it's very, very private, and people just don't force it on others.
I think we have the general attitude. Your religion or your spiritual beliefs are your own business. And people are generally frowned upon if they try to convince other people to believe what they believe on the street, for example, or talk a lot about their religion and faith, assuming that other people believe the same thing. And my experience, speaking of civilizations that are on the decline, perhaps,
ooh,
I should say.
Burn. Watch out. That's a burn.
But anyway, I thought it was interesting, as an agnostic, coming from, a Canadian perspective, where religion is acknowledged, is tolerated, and I think ultimately is viewed as a personal belief. Going down into the States was like, especially, I shouldn't say just the States. The States is a collection of so many different cultures, I believe, mainly separated by geography and politics and faith. But going to the deep South was a real, real eye-opener, because down there, I was the odd one out. And I felt like if you didn't acknowledge that you were of the same Christian faith, evangelical, for example, in certain states, then you were definitely the weirdo. You were definitely odd if you didn't publicly announce your faith down there.
Well, you said it yourself. I mean, you said that you immediately felt that you had to keep a lot of the stuff that you believed to yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just, I didn't feel like I couldn't say these things, but I definitely sensed, based on what other people were saying and the conversations people were having and their expressions of their own faith, that if you were an atheist or an agnostic or non-theist down there, you should generally not expect other people to be very happy about it. And you should not expect other people to understand it, or even understand why you would want to say that publicly.
Well, it's unfathomable that anybody would not be religious and not believe in exactly what they believe.
Yeah.
And that's what must be really difficult for individuals. I mean, undoubtedly there are people down there that are atheists. Not everyone's going to be is going to believe, and you have to wonder, like, what percentage of these people have to keep their mouths shut?
Well,
just to go on, just to get by, just to have job opportunities, career, you know, like not just career opportunities, but relationship opportunities, social standing. In your opinion, what kind of threat would expressing your cosmological viewpoint that doesn't correspond to theirs, what kind of a threat would that be for someone that lives there?
Well, first of all, I should preface everything by saying, you know, people have beliefs everywhere you go, and they're totally entitled to that. But what I'm talking about here is mainly the culture that evolved out of these beliefs, and it's this social culture that I think is really, really palpable down there. I don't think these people would come under any physical harm, but definitely you could expect to be ostracized in a lot of these small communities, and even the major cities.
I think that, you know what, but given the situation, most people would probably actually choose to be physically assaulted rather than emotionally, destroyed and ostracized. I mean, like, what's the greatest punishment that you can give someone? Complete and utter isolation.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a big complaint. I mean, you watch these, documentaries and testimonials or listen to those, and people say, like, you know, people drive up to my house and look at, sitting in their car, just look at my house, be like, gazing, wondering, like, what are these people doing in there? They must be Satan worshippers. And they're just like, you know, I can't even go to the grocery store without getting dirty looks.
Well, look, here's the thing. I think it's just because there's so many people. I mean, the Christian population is the definite majority in a lot of these places. And it's really no fault of their own, but there's just a general expectation that the people that you meet on the street have the same view as you. And that creates a lot of issues. I think that, first of all, the separation of religion and politics and religion and the school system and so on
becomes
such a blurry line.
Nebulous.
I mean, imagine a classroom, for example, where the vast majority, we're talking like 90% of people in the classroom, perhaps including the teacher, hold this religious belief that maybe comes in contradiction, direct contradiction with their faith, like, with science, like take evolution, for example. The same thing could be said for political decisions or divisive issues like abortion. if the majority of people in a secular public institution like a school hold a religious belief, it becomes a little bit difficult, or I imagine it's difficult to separate religion from
the
state.
I think it's much more than difficult. I think it's impossible. It's just like there was a young man who sent me an email actually today. He mentioned that he's about 15 and he goes to school, and I guess he's recently become an atheist. And in his class, they were talking about, creationism and how evolution is just a theory, so on and so forth. And his whole thing was that, he's trying to defend it. Now, being 15 and probably not having a great understanding of it, I don't know how good of a defense he was able to give.
I
will give him some credit. In fact, I actually wrote him back. I suggested to him that he should really study up on it, because the one thing that he's going to notice is that evolution is on the attack, unfortunately, and it does need to be defended. It does need to be understood, because the very fact that people don't believe in evolution demonstrates how little they understand it, and that he will need to really become much more educated than his counterparts, because they will always challenge his particular beliefs.
One thing I noticed is that a lot of people have these prefab
answers
or rebuttals, and it's important to know those ahead of time, so you know that when you bring up the topic of evolution, that the other person is going to have this canned response for you.
And the classic canned response is, if we evolved from monkeys, why are monkeys still here? I mean, people utter that without even actually thinking about it, and they don't even realize what it means.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, the whole issue, and you're right, I mean, that separation is almost impossible, because there's not even the will to separate it.
Exactly.
The will isn't present. I mean, even if they were told there was a mandate coming down hard on them, saying, like, you can't be teaching this anymore, they would fight it.
Yeah.
They would refuse to do it, and what's supposed to happen? The government's supposed to go in and police them and say, like, all of a sudden now they'll be martyrs. They'll be like, look, this government's trying to come in here and tell us how to teach our students. So it becomes a quagmire that you just want to stay away from.
Well,
and everybody just closes their eyes and hopes that the problem is going to go away. This is really what's happening.
It's not
going
to go away, because these people are the government. I mean, this is their democracy. This is their place. So it's... I think the real problem where this all stems from is living in a bubble where the only people you talk to have the exact same beliefs as you do. And that creates an issue where you just are not aware. For example, I was speaking to one guy down there who just simply could not understand why the rest of the world hated the States, which I think is wrong or at least naive on two counts. A, the rest of the world doesn't necessarily hate the States. A lot of the hatred is directed towards American foreign policy. And B, of the people that do hate the States, this gentleman was completely oblivious to what's happening in the rest of the world. Not only in war-torn countries, but in other countries where, dictators are replaced and puppet governments are erected and so on, the whole geopolitical plan. What I think could really help, though, is for people who do believe something different is just to speak up, to be counted, to say that, yes, I live maybe down in the Deep South, for example, but I don't subscribe to the exact same views you do. In fact, the founding fathers in the States were really adamant about the fact that the majority of them were Christian, but nonetheless, they knew that the United States should not be considered a Christian
nation.
Well,
I mean, it's not a coincidence.
It should be a secular nation.
Well, it's not a coincidence.
Well, it's founded on an idea, not on a belief.
Right, and it's not a coincidence that these same men were themselves either deists or would fashionably be called atheists. And like I said in one of my podcasts, it's kind of fascinating that they were able to convince a nation that was otherwise very religious of those very principles, because if you look at the principles themselves, they are sound. Regardless of what religion you believe in, you have to at least accept the fact that people are always going to believe different things than you are. They're not going to mimic those beliefs. But the worst thing that you can do is try to create any government or in any form that would legislate that belief, because you might be on the receiving end rather than the giving end. And there's always that danger. So to avoid it, you have to create that separation. And this is the real tragedy of what's happening over there. Now, we talked over here in Canada about the difference in attitudes, religious attitudes, and one of the main reasons is because in many ways we're much more of a melting pot than the U.S., particularly down south.
I think they consider themselves a melting pot, whereas we consider ourselves to be multicultural.
Right, okay,
we
no,
don't
you're
believe
right.
that people need to be so-called.
Well, the melting pot is the idea of because here's the thing, here's the difference that I see, and I think that it's reversed. A melting pot basically means that at least all of these different ingredients are intermingling, which is not happening in the States, because you go to a place like Florida, for instance, where half the state doesn't even speak English. And you can go over there and not even have to speak your own language in order to get, whatever the hell you want. The point is that this is what you expect from a multicultural, where different cultures exist, but they exist as separate entities that don't intermingle very well. And that, in fact, they're sometimes hostile towards one another.
Ideally, you'd have multiculturalism with mutual respect and at least some common secular, I guess, common ground where these cultures can meet and talk and discuss. But if you ignore the fact that multiculturalism is unavoidable, and if you just expect everyone to melt into this great big pot, well, I guess you're on a one-way ticket to social tension and interracial tension.
I guess what's funny about the whole idea of the melting pot at the end of the day is even though these different ingredients intermingle, at the end you're left with a homogeneous taste in your mouth.
Radio.
And I suppose that homogeneous taste might be, a flavor of Christianity there that
okay.
maybe not everybody is comfortable with.
There is a stretched analogy.
Come on, you don't
Come
like
on.
It? I think it's good.
Okay.
Maybe you don't like it.
I think it's as salty as the next culture, honestly.
That doesn't make any sense. My analogy made perfect
Aha.
sense. You're just a jerk. See if you can be invited next week.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to go back to my yes man, okay? You're not agreeing with
that. Let's insert the sound of a record scratch. There we go.
Hello.
What this podcast needs is sound effects. And I left a pause there, so...
I'm not going to put any sound effects there.
Yeah. You're damn lazy.
I'm lazy. I even have to figure out this because my co-host is actually also the editor of the podcast, and he's now missing. So we're going to see this nice little experiment of whether or not I can actually... make this thing sound good.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure the audience has already probably noticed a considerable dip in the audio quality.
And the sound effect right now.
There you go.
You lazy bastard. You didn't insert anything, did
no,
you?
No, I'm not inserting anything. All right, we're gonna wrap it up. Now, was there anything any other interesting adventures that you had in the States that's maybe a good little anecdote to end on?
Well, a lot of them are just sad.
Oh.
A sad state of affairs. But an interesting note from... across the pond over in Central Europe, visited the city of Prague recently, and I was there for a couple weeks, and I guess looking back, it's almost funny, but I'm sure it was just a terrible thing to live through. For a long time, Prague was basically occupied by a controlling government that wanted to impose religion on the people, so erected about 120 churches.
The most per square kilometer,
yeah, like
or something like that in the world?
Way too many churches. You walk around, you see them everywhere. Around every corner, there's another huge church. And then, during the next, I guess you could call it, occupation, religion was outlawed.
Oh.
So the churches emptied out. And finally, what we're left with now, the Czech Republic being a little more free and open, is people have basically given up on religion, and about 90-95% of people, according to my tour guide, are now atheist.
Nice. I think that the only country that probably boasts that level of atheism is China, and I wouldn't even give China the title of necessarily atheist. I think that they probably... Czech Republic is the new atheist mecca.
Well, I don't know if it's the whole Czech Republic, but that's what my...
tour guide?
Crotchety old tour guide told me.
I don't know if he's a historian.
He said he was, but that doesn't mean he was, so my facts could easily be wrong.
All right, well, it's still an interesting anecdote and perhaps something to look into, maybe as a travel destination for those that are religiously weary.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, what is it a good travel destination in general or a little sketchy?
A bit of both.
Bit of both, good travel. You know, really cheap beer.
Yeah, but 25 cents a glass.
25 cents a glass.
But don't tell the locals it's cheap, they'll get offended.
Oh, yeah, well, I guess for them, is the word cheap and crappy the same?
I don't know. I didn't want to pursue the issue.
It was scary, there were many dark alleys, and everybody was drunk.
And I came back a little lighter, one kidney short.
All right, well, that's it for the GoodAtheist.net podcast. Be sure to visit the website at www.thegoodatheist.net. I am Jacob Forte, your host as usual, and thank you, my co-host for the day, Mr. Thomas.
Hey, send this guy some sound effects.